Hi, this is Daniel Savio, composer, lyricist with the San Francisco Mime Troupe. We're touring our 2023 summer show Breakdown right now all over the Bay Area and Northern California, and you are listening to Transformation Highway on KZSC 88.1 FM.
My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. You're listening to KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org, broadcasting from the University of California, Santa Cruz. Today you'll hear a new interview with Daniel Savio, musical director for the San Francisco Mime Troupe. Daniel is also the son of 1960s radical free speech activist Mario Savio. The San Francisco Mime Troupe is now celebrating their 64th season with a new political musical show called Breakdown. The play focuses on issues of mental health, the unhoused, and a society struggling to meet the needs of its people. The San Francisco Mime Troupe will be performing Breakdown in Santa Cruz on Saturday, August 19th, and Sunday, August 20th, at London Nelson Community Center Park. Both shows begin at 3 p.m., though if you get there early, live music begins at 2:30. The show is free, and they're also grateful to receive donations. London Nelson Community Center is located at 301 Center Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Here now is Daniel Savio. Morning.
Hey, good morning. How's the day going?
Oh, it's barely started.
Oh, good. Did you have a late night then, or?
Yeah, I was up pretty late last night.
I hope you're having fun and not making last minute changes to the show or something.
Oh, no, definitely not. No. The final last minute changes to the show were a couple of weeks ago.
That's what I would figure. You've been doing a lot of shows.
Yeah. There was one that got canceled due to COVID, and then another, or no, there was one that got canceled due to moisture. It was too wet. They couldn't safely run all the electronics. But then there was also one that got rescheduled due to COVID. They were going to do Mill Valley on July 27th, and somebody in the cast got sick, and we rescheduled for August 30th.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm happy to see you, and I'm looking forward to hearing about Breakdown. And I just got back from 5 weeks in Europe, and I had an amazing adventure, and I just had a book published, and I'm going to find you at London Nelson Park when you're here and give you a copy, because I'm just thrilled that the book is out. And I did some events in London and Berlin and Mallorca, which is still kind of mind blowing. But the COVID thing too, like in Berlin, people said, COVID's been over for a year. What are you talking about? And I don't know. So I have a bad cold and I do not have COVID, but I come back to Santa Cruz and one of my friends has COVID, a new case. Anyway, so I'm sorry to hear that the show was affected by COVID, and we're all still kind of in that, kind of out of that. It's bizarro.
Oh yeah, now we are still in the, I mean, I don't know what it's like in Germany, but here we are definitely still in the pandemic. It's still happening. It's not over. But I mean, it's better than it was, that's for sure.
Yes. You know? Yeah. So. And that's really good. And this was my first travel since COVID, and pretty incredible to look around the world again.
Yeah.
And so tell me, the theme of breakdown is really what is on everyone I know, their mind, homelessness and mental illness. And here in Santa Cruz, the number of homeless people is huge and has grown in the last few years. And I'm sure you and I have talked about that because other themes of San Francisco Mime Troupe touch on this, but sure. There's 6 months ago, there was a huge encampment in San Lorenzo Park where the Mime Troupe often has performed. There were probably 600 people in what was a city sanctioned camp. And then after some months, the police come in and they remove everyone section by section. And it was so sad to watch, like the police came with cable cutters and cut the tent poles. And then a bulldozer came in and smashed everything and put it in dumpsters, and people are just scrambling to get their belongings. So anyway, it's good to hit this subject on the head, the mental illness and homelessness. And tell me about how that is dealt with in this new production of the Mime.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, just real quick before I forget, I want to let you know, I'm not going to be in Santa Cruz. But we would love to see that. I would very much like to see your book. And so I hand it off to like Taylor, the sound guy, or Andre, who is one of the actors. Either one of them would be great. And they'll bring it back to the troupe. We'll all get to take a look at it. the show is largely about the unhoused and mental health, not just mental illness, although that too, but mental health more generally, because the story is sort of about three main characters. I mean, there's a few other characters as well, but the three main characters, we've got Yume, who is a young woman who has been living on the streets for quite some time and has some history that she hasn't really fully grappled with yet. And then there's Sadia, who is a social worker who ends up trying to help Yume, but who has her own struggles. She's constantly stressed out, and she never gets to relax even when she's trying to do so. And then finally there's the Fox News reporter Marcia Stone.
Hey, Diana.
I don't want to give away too much. She also has a little bit of history that we delve into in the play. Mostly it's about the way that she is treating others, manipulating other people and using them to her own advantage. So the show, although it is about mental illness, it's also and the title refers obviously to a personal mental breakdown. It's also about the breakdown of society and the breakdown of the social contract that, you know, human needs are just not being taken care of. I mean, we've centered our society so much around greed and not need, which sounds pithy when I rhyme it like that, but it's not supposed to be. Yeah, so I think that's... you know, simply put, that's the problem, is that we've organized our society around the development of riches and not around the development of humanity and human resource, of that is our personal resources of what we are, who we, what we can do, and how we can help each other. Instead, we've organized such a society that sort of encourages us to think of ourselves first, because if we don't, nobody else is going to. So we have to. It's not that we're selfish necessarily. It's just that these are the circumstances that we've been put into. We have to think of ourselves first because nobody else is doing it. So it would be, you know, not that the rest of human history is full of perfect societies or anything like that, but it would be great if we could find a way to organize society such that human needs are put a little bit further forward. And I do think there are countries that are doing better with that. I don't think there's anywhere that's perfect, but there are places, maybe Scandinavia, maybe Germany, maybe Japan, where things, you know, I just visited New Zealand recently. I was accompanying a local chorus group that did a tour there, a brief tour there. And I was really struck by how very differently the society is organized there. They have quite a lot of public housing. They still have this rule that we mentioned, that we no longer have, that when a unit of public housing is torn down, it has to be replaced with another unit of public housing. They still have that rule in New Zealand. And so public housing is being updated and built. I mean, tour driver was very, very knowledgeable, and he pointed out these buildings that are public housing that was built like 60 years ago that is being torn down and replaced with brand new public housing in exactly the same place. And they're just making, you know, updating it, making the buildings up to code, giving so that people. So what he said was in New Zealand, you know, I don't know how true this is, but let's hope. What he said was that in New Zealand, being homeless is essentially a choice because anybody who needs a place can get a place. And that, from what I saw, looked actually like it was true. Like, the very few people I saw who were unhoused were the kinds of people you see on, like, in some places in Santa Cruz and on, like, Telegraph Avenue in Berkeley, who are traveling. You know, they've got their backpack, they've got everything, they're trying to make a life for themselves on the road, as opposed to somebody who has lost the ability to make a life for themselves. It's a small distinction. That's not something that we talk about in the show, but that was what I noticed in New Zealand, was I saw people who were, what do you call it, transient, but not bereft of hope. I think that's a big difference. Value. So yeah, New Zealand was wonderful in that regard. So there are countries where things are handled a little better, but they're still part of the overall global capitalist system. There's only so much that they can do individually. Gosh, wouldn't it be nice to have somebody in charge of the United States as cool as the former Prime Minister of New Zealand? What was her name? Jacinda something or other? I can't remember. Yeah, Jacinda Ardern.
Yeah, and I think
she was fantastic. So
what?
The show.
Where did we end up?
Yeah, like I said, the show kind of focuses on these different characters, but it's also very much focused on one particular neighborhood, which is the Tenderloin. And another thing that we basically say in the show, everybody blames everything in San Francisco on the Tenderloin. Even the people who live in San Francisco blame everything that's wrong in San Francisco on the Tenderloin. And not just on the neighborhood itself, but on the people who live there. As if they have, you know, any real ability to change their circumstances. And the Tenderloin was once, in fact, and this is another thing we go into on the show, the Tenderloin was once a vibrant neighborhood with schools and music venues, places people could gather, and it has a history of activism, unionism. Also, it was where drag queens hung out in San Francisco first, in the Tenderloin. It's actually a rich neighborhood, culturally speaking, and some of that has been lost or pushed aside or devalued. Not that our play is necessarily going to reverse that, but at least we talk about it a little bit.
Are you looking at this from
I think probably, well, certainly, Santa Cruz, I think, can identify probably, people in Santa Cruz can identify a lot with what happens in the Tenderloin as well. But I think that's true in a lot of places.
I think a lot of the owners,
there was a time
when
people said to me, I don't feel comfortable going downtown Santa Cruz.
Right now,
there's
too many
sketchy people and people yelling all of a sudden or coming towards me in a way that's physical and I feel uncomfortable.
I thought,
there's a little bit, but it doesn't really bother me.
And Jody's expertise and
honestly, when I thought, I'm never going to walk by someone who's passed out on the sidewalk and not say something or do something. And now, in Santa Cruz, California, really just walking around downtown, I'll do that 10 times in a half an hour. There's so many people outdoors
and not well. But I've never had
one of my friends is one of them. Someone who used to live in a house who had a series of problems and has some mental health issues. And I think partly what you're pointing at is that mental health is, it's a quality of being human, and we all experience ups and downs. And even people who seem prominent or organized or they're doing well, they might have had mental health issues in the past, some of the characters in Breakdown. And this issue of, you brought up a lot of things that are really interesting with capitalism. I always think going to the
hearing what you've said and looking at the document, if it's going to save us $19,000 or $20,000
in this tiny house,
it's a familiar process. Are there any drawbacks to moving forward?
And go to work and get a loan to buy an apartment. That whole program isn't very attractive.
The only thing is, if that's the out,
That's right. I mean, we don't go too much into the difficulties of tech sector workers, that sort of thing. But for sure, everybody is being sort of ground down, there are people who see that and intentionally try to escape it. There are also people who maybe don't necessarily see it, but are still affected by it, either try to escape it without realizing that that's what they're doing, or are just subjected to it and have no other choice. Yeah, absolutely. I think also that you mentioned, walking by and seeing all these people. We have become it's not that we're without compassion. It's that we are scared, because we all know it's just a couple of paychecks before we're in the same place. I think part of it is that in the United States in particular, mental health is treated as a personal failing, not an illness. If you're having mental issues, it's not because the difficulty you've had with the system. It's not because of you're sick. It's because there's something wrong with you in a more deeper level or some kind of soul level. The general idea that the poor are to blame for their poverty. I mean, this has been a recurring theme in American culture for long before I was born. We very much push back against that idea. When we start to talk about how did things get to be this way, I don't mean in America, but I mean for the characters in particular. Again, not trying to give away anything, but when we do talk about in the play how things became that way for our characters, we do try to make it clear it wasn't your fault. It's absolutely not because of something you did. It's not because of who you are.
So you need that
it's
in
circumstances
writing,
beyond
like
your control,
no,
and
no,
that
I mean,
that we all need to address
we'll just
together.
Yeah, this
says,
is a really important aspect. I think of the background of all of this, the anti-socialism of the United States, and also
the
independence. If you want to make it, you can make it in America. You just have to work hard. And if you don't make it, it's because you haven't worked hard. This thing, like, if you care about other people, and you want to create systems that care about people, it's socialist and communist. And these are things we grew up with as being negative. And that's a
very old.
It's hard to overcome that.
Stop eating.
Definitely.
I think things
may be changing a little bit. I mean, people my age and younger, especially people younger than me, mostly did not grow up hearing communism and socialism used as boogie words.
All right.
Well, I mean, some of us did, sure, but I think to a large extent, people younger than me, it was terrorism, not socialism. So I think a lot of people my age and younger see socialism as something attractive. And they understand, or at least some of them understand, that there can be distinctions drawn between the kind of socialism that you have in Scandinavia, which are capitalist countries with strong social safety nets, as compared to, say, Cuba, which is actually a socialist country. Now, people also, again, young people, I think, at least some young people, understand that Cuba is not an example of how terrible socialism is and how if you become a socialist state, everything's going to fall apart and be terrible. A lot of people understand now that the reason things are difficult so much in Cuba is in part because of the strictness of the regime, and all large part because of the way that they've been treated by the rest of the world under the leadership of the United States. So I think people do understand that, or at least some people do understand that. I have not been to Cuba myself, but my mother has been to Cuba, and what she reported was the people that she spoke to mostly basically like their system. They just want more things, which is understandable, right? Okay, we all like things, sure. And under socialism, you have maybe a little bit less access to things. Okay, you could address that, sure. And some of them obviously want greater access to free speech, and that is absolutely understandable, and they should. But they don't, I think, want fully fledged American capitalism. That's not what they're looking for. They like their educational system. They like their healthcare system. Cuba has like one of the best healthcare systems in the world. So we get so indoctrinated, and it's like a constant struggle to avoid sort of re-indoctrination, or even, you know, even if you escaped it as a child, they're still at it today. I mean, that's why we end up with these people who were, they were hippies in the 60s, and now they've become, they went from hippies to libertarians to conservatives somehow. I don't understand it, but I've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. Really, really strange. And you have, you know, politicians appealing to that too. What was this? I'm not going to remember the name correctly. Marianne Williamson, was that it?
Mm-hmm.
She has some ideas that I agree with, and a lot of ideas that I think are completely ridiculous, and seems to appeal to sort of high hopes but low information voters. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, I appreciate people having high hopes, but probably need to get the information. Mm-hmm. She's not like high up on my radar, Marianne Williamson, just the example that popped into mind.
You mentioned something earlier that reminded me, I haven't thought about this in a while, but I feel like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, there were doctors in Hawaii who were saying being unhoused is a health issue, and I'm going to write you a prescription for a certain amount of money to for housing for the next period of time. I don't know if that's something that's continued, but I thought, whoa, that's kind of a smart breakthrough way of dealing with things.
I mean, in a way, I feel like that's kind of radical, like revolutionary radical, using your position within the system in order to try to help people who are kind of living outside of the system. And that's really terrific. That it does sound a little familiar. Like, I think I maybe heard that at one point, but I don't know too much information about it, but that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm.
My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. You're listening to KZSC 88.1 FM, KZSC.org. You're listening to an interview with Daniel Savio, musical director with the San Francisco Mime Troupe. Their current political comedy musical, Breakdown, is being performed in Santa Cruz on Saturday, August 19th and Sunday, August 20th at London Nelson Community Center Park. Both shows begin at 3 p.m. Here again is Daniel Savio.
The police have always been one of my focus points since I have been living in Santa Cruz. And I have always hoped that we would change policing and not have, when there's issues of safety, we don't have people entering the scene with guns and loudspeakers and tanks and demanding control, but that they show up with actual skills for dealing with people who are having mental health issues, which is half of what they arrive to. I don't know if Breakdown is touching on that. And I'm sure we talked about this before, but just 3 years ago, so many people around the whole world were saying, let's change or end policing. And it's like other movements, it's kind of dissipated that energy. But does Breakdown touch on?
It does. We don't have any characters who are police officers in this show, but we have characters who talk about the police for sure. The characters in it essentially, I don't want to give away too much, but these aren't like major plot points. This is more sort of just the information that we talk about. We have characters who sort of actually discuss the idea. We don't want to get rid of police entirely. We actually need people to be there to help when there is something bad happening, something dangerous happening. But we need those people to not treat the people that they're interacting with as if they are enemy combatants. The police shouldn't be acting like an occupying army. And so we talk about that. In fact, it's really what we talk about is people on the other side claiming that we are saying, or not we, the mime troupe, but claiming that leftists, I suppose, are saying we need to get rid of police, and pushing back against that and saying, no, we don't need to get rid of police entirely. We need to get rid of police who are treating us as subhuman. We need police who are actually going to help. So I live in Richmond, California, and I haven't kept entirely on top of this. I don't really know how things are now, but I know that before I moved to Richmond, the city had a pretty bad reputation, both in terms of crime and in terms of policing. The relationship of the police to the community was awful, really, truly awful. And then they put a new chief in whose name was Chris Magnus. He's no longer here. He's moved on to some other, district somewhere. But what he did was he instituted real community policing, where you had, instead of when there was a problem or potential problem, instead of just rounding up a bunch of people and throwing them all in jail, they went and found the particular people who were actually causing the problems, and they offered them money. As long as you keep your nose clean, you'll get a monthly allowance. And that program really worked. You know, bad incidents with the police dropped way down, and crime also dropped way down. It's not perfect. It's still it's still one of the poorest areas in the Bay Area, and as a result, also one of the highest crime areas. That's how it works in this society. But it's much better. It's much better. And I'll tell you, I witnessed an interaction. There was a woman who was, having some sort of episode. She was sitting on somebody else's front porch and just kind of moaning. And when people did approach her and say, are you all right? And trying to help. And she responded just kind of angrily, but incoherently, not in a way that anybody could do anything about. So the police were called. The police came and just talked to her for like a good 20, 30 minutes. Just talked to her until she was ready to say, okay, I'll go to the hospital. And they took her to the hospital. And that was it. Guns were never drawn. There was no yelling. There were no dogs. There were no sirens. They did an excellent job, I thought, of de-escalating and really trying to help her. And I really hope that that's typical of how it goes in Richmond these days. I know it's not perfect. I do every now and then. I still see articles saying, somebody was shot by the cops or something like that. And I'm sure sometimes that's basically unavoidable, or at least within the sort of the rubric of how the police currently exist, it's unavoidable. But I think they do a relatively good job these days in Richmond compared to how they have done and how they sometimes do elsewhere. I don't think the cops need to carry guns except when it's a specific thing. Like, that's basically how they do it in England. The beat cops don't carry guns at all. When they need police with guns, they send in a special unit. I'm sure I probably wouldn't agree with everything that British cops do, but I certainly prefer that basic organization principle. Also, Teen, I think this is a little bit off topic, but I think I've seen videos of police in, I want to say it was Japan, surrounding a guy who had a knife, and they were all like wearing big pillow outfits, basically. And they basically just surrounded this guy until he couldn't do anything because he was just enclosed. So that was pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine anything like that ever happening in the United States. Mm-hmm. I think it's also, the police are terrified. And I think that that's in their training. I would assume that it's in their training that new police officers get indoctrinated to believe that the people on the streets are out to get them. And although we talked about that really, really directly in Freedomland back in 2015, but we do talk about it a little bit in this show as well. but mostly the focus of this show is on the people themselves, not on quite so much their interactions with the system, except through the eyes of the social worker character who really does interact directly with the system. But that's, I think it was really, when the show was being written, the focus was much more on mental health and the relationship of the individual to the society as opposed to the systems. I mean, there are systems. We talk about the systems. There's even a scene where we have the social worker interacting with, you know, bureaucrats and such. But the real focus of the story is on the people. And I hope that's, you know, what people take away. I think that this year's show is very moving. Whereas there were moving things in last year's show too, but last year's show, you know, stylistically, the way the Mime Troupe does things, last year's show was kind of a sitcom. It was based on the idea of like the Honeymooners and sort of twisting that idea. This year's show is really more of like a psychological thriller, a la Alfred Hitchcock or something like that. A little bit. We draw from that kind of vein. While we were preparing, while we were writing the show, we did a little bit of research of like watching old movies of like what was it called? It's a film called The Snake Pit. And it's about a woman who gets put into a mental institution against her will. She finds herself in a mental institution and can't remember how she got there. That's from 1948. Anatole Litvak, Olivia de Havilland. She's terrific. So yeah, while we were preparing, we watched that. Not that the show doesn't feel like a 1950s. Psychological movie while you're watching it. It actually maybe feels a little bit more like a modern, like a Japanese anime movie or something like that. But not one that's, I mean, you know, Japanese animation is so diverse. This is, you know, not giant robots, not Godzilla, but just people living their lives. But with the way that the Mime Troupe does things, things get stylized, things get heightened, and of course the music and the storytelling go along with each other, which is hard when, you know, this year's show is a little bit longer than most Mime Troupe shows. Mime Troupe shows are usually about an hour to an hour and 15 at most, and this is actually an hour and a half long. 90 minutes, no intermission, so it's really a full-length play, honestly. And so, you know, usually you're so pressed for time in a Mime Troupe show, and even in a 90-minute Mime Troupe show, the songs are not, you know, 15-minute long songs. They're usually fairly short, but we do try to integrate them into the scenes. So even sometimes with songs that where the lyric content of the song may be fairly short, but we break it up and spread it out over the course of a scene. So you have a bit of song and then you have some dialogue and then a bit of song and then some dialogue and then the conclusion of the song. So the whole thing ends up being, 10 minutes long, even if the song content itself was only, you know, 4 minutes or something like that. Another thing that's really fun about this year's show is that we essentially have a whole new mime troupe. The cat, you know, five person cast, and three of those people, this is their first mime troupe performance. And then of the other two, one of them, it's their second mime troupe performance. So to some large extent, it's like there's a whole new troupe up there on the stage. And that really, it almost extends to the band pit too. So because although our drummer, Jason, he played with us last year, the other two musicians in the pit are new this year. So it's a whole new crew, and they've been doing a great job. But you know, the Mime Troupe is so specific. It's so idiosyncratic. It's got its own style that although it touches on, commedia dell'arte and other older forms and such. There is no one else who does exactly what we do, right? I mean, you go to ACT and you see, Les Miserables or whatever. it's the same show that you saw in New York. What I mean, you know, different directors do a little something different, but it's essentially the same show. You will never see any other company do what the Mime Troupe does, ever. It'll never happen. You might see them do their own thing that is equally unique and idiosyncratic, but it'll never be the same thing that we do. So yeah, it's really interesting to see a whole new crew of people sort of discovering the style and adapting their own skills to that style. And it's been a lot of fun. Also, you know, I played in the band 2014 or 15, I can't remember, all the way up until last year. This is the first year, you know, not the, you know, recording work in the during the first couple of years of the pandemic notwithstanding, this is the first summer tour that I have not been in the band since I joined the company in 2015. I think I'm probably going to be back in the band next year, most likely, but it's been nice to take a year off from the tour, and it's been fun to get to actually see the show you know, from the audience perspective and hear the show. That's been really wonderful. It's my second year in terms of the stage shows, again, the recording work in the pandemic notwithstanding, writing both the lyrics and the music. Back before the pandemic started, with Treasure Island, I wrote lyrics, but our composer then was Michael Bello. And then in the recording work, I started doing both the music and the lyrics, and that's what I'm doing now also. So that's been absolutely a blast to work with all these folks creating these performances.
Fantastic. Congratulations. I'm looking forward to seeing this, as I am every year. And it's the 64th anniversary of the Mime Troupe. That's amazing.
Yeah, the company has been around the block a few times for sure. You know, it's always a struggle. We constantly need to be, you know, looking for funding, looking for people who want to help. Which you know, it's a socialist theater company in a capitalist society. So it is hard to find people with money who want to give it to us. There are people like that, but it's hard to find them. So we need them to find us in part, but we also need to step up our game in terms of locating those folks who want to help us.
I hope that happens. And maybe someone listening to this will jump on that and get in touch.
That would be terrific. That would be terrific. You know, there have been instances of people, there was somebody who left us a house. And then apparently I think their strangely conservative grandchildren didn't like that the Red Theater Company was gonna get their house. So there was some you know, bandying back and forth with lawyers. We did end up getting, I don't know if we got the whole house, but we got a significant chunk, and that helped us a lot. So the lesson is, if you don't know what to do with your house and you don't want to leave it to your strangely conservative grandkids, give it to the Mime Troupe. Don't give us a horse, though. House, not horse. We don't want a horse.
They sound so similar, though.
So similar. Just one letter.
Hey, really great to see you again.
Yeah, it's great. I'm sorry I'm not going to be down in Santa Cruz. I have been coming to some of the shows, but, you know, part of the point of taking the year off from the tour was not to go to all of the shows.
Yeah, that's good to have a break. I imagine you're playing your own music and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I've been doing other things. I mean, for the last 6 years, I've been accompanying in church, Catholic church in Marin, and that job is coming to an end at the end of this month. I only have 3 weekends left, but it's been really good for me to have that, you know, regular work, and now things have come to a point where I've been getting offers for theater work that I really wanted to be able to take, that was incompatible with the church schedule, and eventually something had to bend, and I decided that even though having a regular job is very nice, good for my security, I couldn't allow it to prevent me from taking theater jobs that I really wanted. That was not acceptable to me. So something had to give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for hanging out again and talking about Breakdown. And
yeah, I had a blast.
All right.
All right, man.
Enjoy the day today.
Take care.
Okay.
See you later.
See you later.
You've been listening to an interview with Daniel Savio, musical director with the San Francisco Mime Troupe. Their current political comedy musical is being performed for free in Santa Cruz on Saturday, August 19th and Sunday, August 20th at London Nelson Park. The shows begin at 3 p.m. and live music begins a half an hour earlier at 2:30. My name is John Malkin, and this is Transformation Highway. You're listening to KZSC 88.1 FM, kzsc.org.